The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Adventures in Recovery. I'm Tom Walston, your host for the next half hour. And so welcome all of our, well, you call yourselves Vashonians, Vashonites, what would you call them, Rondi?
Oh, you're going to start by putting me on the spot?
Well, you've lived here a lot longer than most. I don't even live here. I live in Tacoma.
Vashonders.
Hey, live Vash yonder and Vash yonders. Well, that's good to know, because we're going to be talking more with Rondi in just a few minutes and her vast knowledge of how do we deal with grief. It's something that we're all going to experience, but we've never really had any directional training on how to process that. So we'll talk to her in just a couple of minutes. You know, every Tuesday at 1:30, I'll be here talking with you about, well, we call it Adventures in Recovery, because we're all basically recovering from something. It's not just a substance or a habit, or we could be recovering from anything. And grief is a very important one. And that's why I wanted to address that today. So on the Voice of Vashon, while we explore the many ways we can recover and move toward having a happier and well-rounded and full life. So I'm glad you're all with us today. Like I said, every Tuesday at 1:30, we'll be addressing a different topic. And there are so many fascinating people on Vashon that I'll never probably reach all of them to be my guest and to be able to interview on the show. But we're going to do our best every Tuesday to bring you something that you can use in your lives for a fuller and more complete life. I'm also going to be bringing you some tips on things coming up in the area. In fact, coming up, September 1st coming up, and it's going to be up here at Thriftway between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. is going to be another way you can support Vashon Youth and Family Services with their baked goods, and the bake sale is going to be September 1st, 11 to 3. So if you have a hankering for something sweet, be sure to go up, and you're supporting a great cause. And also, if you need some assistance in getting insurance, if you qualify for Apple or state insurance or Medicaid, there's a gentleman that shows up here every once in a while at the library here in Vashon, and he'll help you get it all. The paperwork sometimes is confusing, or some people might not have computer technology to do that themselves. So Miguel is going to be here Wednesday, September 18th. Okay, that's going to be on a Wednesday, September 18th, from 12:30 to 3 p.m. So just show up at the library. Now, you got to remember, this gentleman comes over on the ferry, and, you know, sometimes we cannot totally rely on those times. So building a little extra time, and try to be a little bit more flexible with that, if you would. So my guest today has written a book. She's got her master's in psychology. Her name is Rondi Lightmark. She's actually written a couple of books. The book that we're going to be talking about today is called The Difference Between Seeds and Stones. And it actually recounts her journey from grief to revelation. And this whole process started when she lost her husband. And, you know, it's kind of interesting the way something that could be deemed as extremely tragic in your life can actually turn out to be a blessing, or an opportunity to grow in so many ways. I ran across some quotes from some very famous individuals. This first one, you probably won't guess who it's from, but let me share it with you. When something bad happens, you have three choices: You can either let it define you, let it destroy you, or you can let it strengthen you. Now, by the way, that was Dr. Seuss bringing us some words of enlightenment. And there's another quote from Elizabeth Gilbert saying, "It's an honor to be in grief. It's an honor to feel that much, to have loved that much." So after briefing a little bit of Rondi's book, I'm going to turn the mic over to her and have her tell you a little bit more about, you know, the way she grew after the passing of her husband. Because in 2023, her book actually won a Silver Nautilus Book Award. Now, these awards are given to books that are deemed instrumental in creating a better world. And that's pretty much what this show is all about, helping you create a better world for yourself. And this book has been so successful, there's been a lot of winners of this award, but these are all names that you would recognize. Recipients include the Dalai Lama, Marianne Williamson, Deepak Chopra, Desmond Tutu, Julia Cameron, and Eckhart Tolle. Rondi, it's a pleasure having you with us today.
Recover. And it's a pleasure to be here and to get to know you, Tom. Thank you.
I know you've been on the island for quite a while. You've been over here since, what, 20?
I always get mixed up about it. I'll just say 20 years.
20 years. Yeah. Okay. I like that. And Seasoned Stones is not your first book. You started out doing, wasn't it greeting cards with four-leggeds? And
oh, that's only when I arrived to the island. I had become a professional writer almost 30 years ago and had worked on some of that. But this book, I felt, is the memoir of the loss of my husband when I was 48 years old. I'm now approaching 78 next month. So I had the very strong feeling that I had to tell the whole story before I exit this plane of existence. And so I had a lot of journals from over the years and various attempts to tell the story, and this finally all came together for me. And just to get this piece over with, it is available through the public library, through Vashon Bookshop, and also at Minglement, and on Amazon.
Good to know. And I know you've got a very well put together website too, and a person can subscribe to your newsletter as well. You know, some of us that have done a little bit of research in learning how to deal with grief and loss may be familiar with what are deemed as the five stages of grief and loss. And those stages don't necessarily all happen in order. They're different for everybody. It can include everything from disbelief to anger to rage to, well, a lot of different things. And what Rondi's been able to do in processing her own feelings of losing her husband, break it down to three, I would say, more digestible stages in dealing with your grief.
Yes, I'd like to preface that, though, by saying that up until, I want to say, the 1960s, Western religion very much had the prescription for how to deal with grief, how to think about it, which basically is your loved one is in heaven, you'll see him or her someday, and here is a community of people who share the same understanding, who is here for to support you. When the whole upheaval and the spiritual, not religious, movement came into being, and I very much have been a part of that, then psychology kind of took over. And those five stages are very much how psychology thinks we should process grief, but in fact, it really doesn't address, in my experience, the deep, deep spiritual work that is part of encountering death, asking what your life is going to be about going forward, and the biggest question of all, where is my loved one? Psychology kind of says it's time for you to heal from the pain, and these are the stages you're going to go through, but it doesn't really offer any practice or ritual for understanding or even making a loving connection with your loved one. And I had a very different approach for two reasons. One was that I had spent a good deal of my life in Waldorf education. And if people are familiar with Waldorf education, it's based on the philosophy of Rudolf Steiner, who is the Austrian scientist, mystic philosopher, also the founder or inspiration for the biodynamic farming movement, among other things. And Steiner was very much a believer that the dead do go on, and that in fact our relationship with the dead is an important one that can be a healthy and helpful one for both. And so I had that influence in my life. I also had a well-known Vietnamese healer who was taking care of me with medicines afterwards, after Jim died. And he said, let him go for now, and in a couple of months, he'll come back to you. Mm. And I didn't know what that meant, but I felt that like the two inspirations that I had gave me permission, and I tend to be a loner, so I wasn't someone who wanted to join a group, and I tend to be a pleaser, or less now, the older I get, but I would find that if I was in a group, I'd be taking care of and getting involved in everyone else's story instead of my own, and I needed my own time and way to process. So the most important thing that I want to share today, because we don't have a lot of time, was that the ritual that I created before I went to bed each night was really my anchor and something that I did for more than a year and was really transformative for me. So I felt that grief had two parts. And the first one was, I want to say, poor me.
Because
what's going to happen to me? And that first part included all of the stress that was my body was feeling, which brought up the question, is grief going to kill me? Mm. The second question was a soul question, which is, who am I without Jim in my life? What is my meaning and purpose going forward? And the third one was a spirit question. What is my infallible source of strength? If I lost absolutely everything, where do I go to find that core that would keep me going? So I was able in my grieving to really kind of orient myself around those three questions. But in terms of the practice that I did every night, I put an altar with my precious stones and pictures and talismans, whatever, on next to my bed.
So almost like a shrine to that person.
Yes, but it was also for me. It was for the two of us.
Yeah, a shrine of that person
yes.
for you. Okay.
My power place, maybe one could say. And I would start, after having had a very quiet evening so that I wasn't carrying the residue of a movie or a book or anything else just having a rather quiet evening, I would sit in my that space, and I would shed any feelings that had come up during the day. Just aloud, I'd just talk, I'd cry, I'd do whatever I needed to do to kind of clear the decks. Mm. And then I would say, okay, that was about me. Now this is about you, Jim.
Okay.
And so I did some kind of energy clearing things that I had learned. And then I would focus on Jim. I would close my eyes. I would visualize and see his face. And then I would focus on my heart, because as those of us who have, and we all experience grief in some way, on some level, whether you lose a person or not in our lives, life has constant experiences of challenge in it. And we tend to want to then shut our hearts down. And I knew that I would not have any kind of an authentic experience if I kept my heart shut down. So I really would kind of straighten myself up. I would focus on my heart and will it, or encourage it, or allow it to flood itself with love and the realization of the love I felt for Jim. And then I would take that energy and I would send it to him like a beam of light.
Okay.
To him. And as long as it felt like it was alive and not shifting into an idea of love, which is easy to think, to fall into that, especially in our culture, thoughts and prayers. Our ideas, not experiences, in the mouths of so many. So after that was had become an authentic experience, then I would ask for help. And, you know, not having fully solved the question of God or angels or whatever, I still opened myself to because I was feeling so many strong experiences of spiritual support. So I would ask for help from Jim, from whoever else and whatever else was out there. And then I would complete that time by giving thanks. And it was kind of like saying, you know, I don't know why this has happened to me. I don't know why this has happened to us. But I'm going to accept that this is my life path and that I will find my way and that I will have the support and love to go forward. And when I was finished, then I would just crawl into bed and I would sleep very deeply because I had really cleaned out and put myself in the right place. And I like to say I slept like in the arms of angels. And I would have extraordinary dreams. Some of the dreams were about Jim. And some of the dreams were about me and my process. And I kept a journal so that I could say, okay, this is about you feeling overwhelmed. Okay, this is about you searching. Okay, this is about you feeling stuck and lost. And sometimes I would dream about Jim and he would come and he would hold me or he would touch me. And when I woke up, I could still feel his touch. And so that really anchored me. And I did that practice for more than a year. And I felt like I was really growing a new organ of perception, I want to say.
Oh, you know? Sure.
And so that's the most important and powerful thing that I feel like, above all, I wanted to share today. And I actually shared it in a Facebook group. I was curious to see what some of the Facebook groups for widowers were like. So I went to one of them, and it seemed like there were so many people that were completely overwhelmed and lost. Mm-hmm. So I I shared that particular exercise, and within just a number of days, there were more than 1,200 likes and 207 comments of gratitude and relief. And if I'd known this 10 years ago, I wouldn't have suffered as long as I've suffered, which really spoke to me about this death-denying problem we have in our culture, that connecting with a loved one such as I describe is considered woo-woo or, you know, not, you know, you can hope for a butterfly. But, you know, I spoke to a friend the other day who told me of an experience of connection that she'd had with her husband that she'd never told a soul because our culture says, no, don't go there.
Oh, and it's so mysterious to some people. And when we have mystery, there tends to be a lot of fears attached to that. And from what I'm hearing from you is one of the first steps in this three-step process is giving yourself permission to feel. Because in our Western society and in this culture, when we lose someone or something, a lot of people say, well, just be strong. You're going to get through this. Well, by being strong, it seems like shrouding the feelings we have around it and shutting them off and not giving ourselves permission to feel, which is what, step one? Was that of the three? It was, what will this kill me? It's your body. Mm-hmm. Give yourself permission to cry or to feel what you need to feel, but do it in a safe place and know that that is totally normal and that's part of the process. And I've often, I was told once by somebody, the level of crying that you're going to be doing is reciprocal to the depth of love you had for that particular person. And we say person, but the loss of a pet can be devastating as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, animals can be family in another way. And we talk about families being, you have your family of source, or you can have your family of choice. And they can both be just as intimate and just as close to you. Grief can be losing a job or getting in a car accident, or it shows up in so many different ways.
It does. But I would say that the big loss and the most anguish comes from having that love connection disappear. Mm. With a pet, as we know, unconditional love is the purest that we are probably ever fortunate enough to experience. Mm-hmm. And with our loved ones, whether it's with a partner or a child or whatever, there are different, I would say, challenges. Certainly with a partner, a lot of people struggle with issues like guilt or regrets or whatever, which in my book I describe why that is important to let go, and I struggled with it too. In terms of care for the body, that's a separate issue, really, from this practice that I just described. You know, and so like the body, the soul, and the spirit, those were very particular parts of my journey, and my growing into who I am today, and it's really rather amazing. I think that I know people have heard that of people who get terminal illnesses or lose everything or lose their home or their anything that totally wipes out life as they thought it was, do often end up saying it's the best thing that I ever could have experienced, mm-hmm. because it brought me to the core of who I am, what I'm here for, and opened me to how much help there is beyond my own resources, that there are great, great resources that open you to knowledge of your greatness.
Well, you know, Rondi, one example that comes to mind is the pandemic. When COVID came, a lot of us suffered due to lack of socialization. A lot of people are still reeling back from that whole situation. And this is just another example of how, well, look at some of the things that developed because of the COVID situation. Zoom. We can communicate with anybody around the world and see their face and hear their words just by tuning in to a Zoom channel. And that's been extremely helpful in the world of recovery with 12-step programs or other forms of therapy. So we can be like the phoenix. When we suffer a loss, we can grow through it and become a much richer, stronger person as a result of that. And once again, in talking about the three stages that Rondi talks about in her book here, by the way, the book again is called Seeds and Stones. Get it in your local library, and if it isn't there, be sure to ask for it. But the three steps are, she talks about body, soul, and spirit. Body being, will this grief kill me? That's the first question. Soul, who am I without my beloved? That's the second question. And the third, of course, deals with the spirit. What is my source of strength? So when we go through grief and loss, look at it as an opportunity for yourself to transcend and to grow. And basically, it's a recipe to reinvent yourself as a gift that this person, place, or thing left for you.
Or rather than reinvent, maybe there's another way to talk about just finding the true nature, not only of your relationship, but also your own greatness, as I said before.
Ah, and it all comes back to basically levels of acceptance. Acceptance of what happened, acceptance of what you're going through, and acceptance of you're not alone. There's a way to get through this, and you'll always be connected with that person, place, or thing if you just open your heart to that energy.
Yes. Mm. Yes, well said. Thank you.
What a joy having you today, Rondi. And we can close with, I love the story of how you got, because Rondi is such a unique name. I love the story about spending a time in your life in England.
You mean how I got my name?
Well, how you changed it from Randy to Rondi.
Well, I was christened Randy, because it's a Norwegian name, so you have to figure out how to say it, you know, with an A and not an O. But I was headed off to England with the original spelling, R-A-N-D-I. And in England, you don't want to be Randy, because it's not a good name.
Well, sometimes you might. Sometimes
so
you
I changed the spelling to O. So for those of you out there who know me, don't spell it with an H, please.
Rondi Lightmark, what a delight having you today on Adventures in Recovery. And folks, thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you again next Tuesday at 1:30.